Good afternoon, and good morning still. But wonderful to be here, to be back actually in Chicago, and to open Bechvod HaChsanya, beginning with Rabbi Brand, not only for the beautiful introduction, but for all the planning, the arrangements, the assistance in assuring that I would be here and have the zchut to learn Torah together with you today. In addition, I would like to also thank the Strauss families, but ultimately you, all the members of the Chicago community, and Neely, this wonderful initiative that has gotten off the ground to enable women to come together and learn Torah. And particularly, as Rabbi Graham was mentioning, that it's difficult to leave family, so I must share with you that this summer in particular has been all the more difficult, leaving children in Eretz Yisrael, leaving my family, my community, my nation. And that's really how I feel. Some of I was sharing with people in Machane Moshava, of whom where there are many Israelis, and I told them that as much as I'm teaching Torah, and I know that doing Baruch Hashem and positive endeavors in Chutz Laretz right now, it's very difficult to be here, knowing that my neighbors and families and our community and our nation and Eretz Yisrael is in peril. And therefore, I want to thank you in particular for this opportunity, because I feel that this is what we can do here. We can not only continue our tehillim and our tefillot, but Rav Nachman Mibreslov has a beautiful, beautiful phrase where he says that our torot should be transformed to tefillot. And the hope then this morning is that that in fact is what will go all the way up and pierce Shamayim, as HaKadosh Baruch Hu will answer us with continued assistance and protection, and hopefully nechamot. So with this, as you look at the title, I have to be honest in saying that it's partially inspired by the events of as of late, not only the dedication, as you see, but I was thinking about this title and thinking about the dmut of Racheli Meno, as over the past few weeks, a very close friend of mine, Racheli Frankel, who has become, Baruch Hashem, as I told her, not just the spokeswoman for her family and for the three families of Naftali, Ayal, and Gilad, but she has truly become the spokeswoman for all the mothers of Am Yisrael. And in every generation, we wait and see who are the Nashim Tzidkaniyot, who are the righteous women, for whom, as Chazal teach us, the Geula will be precipitated. B'schut Nashim Tzidkaniyot Negalu B'nei Yisrael Mimitzrayim, U'b'schut Nashim Tzidkaniyot Atidim B'nei Yisrael Higael. It's in the merit of righteous women that we anticipate the coming of the future Geula. So I wrote Racheli a long letter and spoke to her about the koach that she's been giving to all of us. But at the same time, amidst the crisis and not knowing where the boys were, there, as I'm sure you heard, and as I heard that you had here as well, women were coming together in particular. Throughout Eretz Yisrael, there were gatherings of Tfilot Nashim. And one of them was in one of the Midrashot where I teach in Migdal Oz, where peers, friends, colleagues, teachers of Racheli were all there, and we said Tehillim together, and then we called Racheli on the phone as we spoke to her, and then we sang together Rachel Mevaka al Banaha. And every time I think about that moment, think about crying together with her, thinking at the same time of Rachel Imenu, who cries together with us, I personally gained a tremendous amount of nechama, and I hope then to share that with you. But in order to appreciate then the poignant prayers of Rachel and the personality of Rachel, who amongst all the imahot, we deem as the most relatable of the matriarchs. And even though we place Sarah on a pedestal, and we mention Leah and Rivka all the time as well, it's Rachel who somehow, both in Piyutim and in our prayers, has become known as Mama Rachel, has become known as the mother that we relate to on a very personal level. And I believe that if we examine her personality and probe the sources in Tanakh a little more, then we'll be able to extrapolate the true message that Rachel is trying to enable us to relate to. So we begin with the stories of Rachel, where we're first introduced to her, as you see on the first page, within the context of the stories of Yaakov Avinu, which are very carefully structured in the Torah. They begin with Yaakov's departure immediately after he stole the brachot from Esav and is then confirmed with his father, telling him, yes, you should also receive the bracha of Avram Avinu. Yaakov departs from his bloodthirsty brother Esav on his way to Lavan. Things aren't going so well for him. He meets angels along the way who assure him with the famous dream where Hashem appears and tells him not to Not to worry, you will return here. I hereby grant you the covenants of the land and the covenants of the nation. Yaakov then continues upon his escape to Laban. He then, after meeting Rachel, labors for her for 7 years, only to be duped by Laban, and then marries Leah, and then has to work an additional 7 years for Rachel. If one looks at ABC, basically the first stage of the life of Yaakov Avinu, the first 14 years that we hear about in depth, we find that these must be quite distressing for him. Certainly not successful, and not the parochial term. We then continue, though, and hear of the birth narrative, the birth of Yaakov's children, one after the other, which is, in fact, the longest birth narrative in all of Tanakh. And many of you are thinking, well, that's because there are 12 children who are born. So, of course, it's going to be the longest, where we hear she conceives and she gives birth and she names a child. But we're going to explore in just a moment that the Torah is going to elaborate upon the story beyond what seems to be necessary. In other words, beyond just the stories of the births, we're going to hear additional narratives. But let's continue for a moment. Immediately after these birth stories, we hear of Yaakov laboring for Laban once again. So much so that it's very clear that these years more or less overlap with the years that he also is still bearing children. He labors for money for 6 years in order to return to Eretz Yisrael, to return to Eretz Canaan with some profit and not merely as an indentured servant. Yaakov then, realizing that Laban is continuing in his very surreptitious ways, and he knows that the only way then to leave this culture is to escape from him. But this time, he ends with a brit shalom, a covenant of peace with Laban. And even as he's escaping, Laban receives a dream this time, hearing from God not to touch Yaakov. Yaakov then returns to Esav and meets angels along the way. We get a sense, as one is sensitive to the chiastic structure from the Greek word chias, meaning X, we see that the life of Yaakov is structured in such a way that by the end of the story, we're all supposed to feel a certain sense of closure. But whenever the chiasm highlights the center, the turning point, we also are meant to be sensitive to what is it within the story that transforms the life of Yaakov, as we see from the first period of travails and tribulations to one where finally he's successful. Yaakov labors for money and is successful with his flock despite the fact that Laban tricks him again and again. Yaakov escapes from Laban, but this time has nothing to fear as he meets the angels as he returns to Eretz Yisrael. And if one looks carefully, we appreciate that it's the birth narrative that serves as the transition in the life of Yaakov Avinu. So perhaps if we examine the birth narrative a little more, we'll be able to appreciate how Yaakov comes to a different recognition through the story. Lo and behold, the birth narrative contains a structure in and of itself. It begins with the birth of 4 children to Leah, one right after the other. And then, as I mentioned, a story that isn't related directly to birth. As a matter of fact, in a quite despairing manner, it doesn't end with a birth. And that is Rachel's story of approaching Yaakov and demanding that he provide her with children. We then continue with Rachel, who gives her maidservant Bilhah to Yaakov and 2 children to Rachel's maidservant, followed by Leah, following in a similar manner, gives her 2 her maidservant and thereby bears 2 children to Yaakov as well. Then we have another Rachel story. Do you remember the story of the Dudaim? This time Rachel demands these fertility mandrakes, flowers, from Leah. And unfortunately, that story also doesn't end with a birth, only to have immediately thereafter 3 children born, right after the other, Yisachar, Zvulun, and Dinah. And then finally, we hear the birth of Rachel's child, Yosef. Notice then the birth of 4 children, but 3 of them belong to Leah, and only 1 is going to be born to Rachel. Anyone who's looking at the structure should be somewhat troubled by this. It's almost as if the Torah is telling us this could have ended perfectly. If one looks at the form here, the ABC, the birth of 4 children to Leah at the beginning could have been complemented with the birth of 4 children to Rachel at the end. And yes, we are supposed to feel that it's almost perfect, but something went awry. And maybe if we examine the story together in depth, we'll be able to appreciate, especially through the focus on the stories of Rachel Imenu, perhaps what was missing, and ultimately how the story is left with a much stronger message. We continue then on page number 3, where we begin the narrative together. The story of the birds actually begin with the character of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Vayar Hashem kisnua leya, vayiftach et rachma v'rachel akara. Hashem gets involved in the story. Hashem sees that Leah is the despised wife and therefore opens her womb. The Rachel Akara. The Torah is already revealing to us what type of barrenness Rachel suffers from by juxtaposing that term to the opening of the womb of Leah. In other words, Rachel and Leah both had closed wombs. Chazal even tell us that Leah was also barren for a certain amount of time, but not the barrenness that we would call today a medical terminology, again, explained fertility, not like Sarah, who was postmenopausal, and thereby, when she did give birth, it was clearly miraculous. This is what we would call unexplained infertility. Rachel and Leah both have wombs, they're both menstruating on a regular basis, and yet HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to be involved in opening Leah's womb. So now Leah can bear a child. In the meantime, Rachel Akara, what's the state of her womb? It is still closed. What are we waiting for, though? And we're still hopeful and anticipating that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will be involved and also, at some point, open Rachel's womb. In the meantime, hers is closed. But let's see how Leah responds to this. Vatar Leah vateled ben, vatekra shmo Reuven. She names her son Reuven. Why does she name him Reuven? What does the name mean, Reuven? Look, it's a boy, right? They blew helium balloons. I'm sure she handed out cigars. Anna basically is trying to say, yes, that's the basic name for my son. However, she adds what becomes known in Tanakh as a midrashim, an added explanation. A dimension to the name that she wants to share. What does she say? Ra'a Hashem bo'oni ki ata yehevani ishi. When I think about the name Reuven and I think about the child, I also recognize that this is a child that Hashem saw, for he saw my oppression, and now hopefully my husband will love me. In other words, Leah is convinced, without knowing the previous pasuk, that this child is a clear manifestation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's involvement in her life, and that's what she wants to pronounce. I understand exactly why I had this child. This is because of Hashem's involvement with me. Let's continue with the next child, the next pasuk. Vatar od vateled ben. And when she has another child, she says, Ki shama Hashem kisnua anochi, v'yitein li gam etzeh. I know why I had this child as well. That's because God heard me. God was involved. God heard my prayers and gave me this child as well. Henceforth, his name Shimon. By the time she has the third child, she says, wow, now it's not man on man anymore. Time to play zone. This child will be called Levi, for my husband has to accompany me. And she realizes, by default, her husband will always be around her now. Only then, for her to give birth to a fourth child, and she's somewhat astounded, as she says, Hapam odeh et Hashem. I don't know why God really gave me the child. I don't need the child anymore, for after all, my husband has to accompany me at all times. So this child is an expression of my gratitude to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. She understands that this child is also from Hashem, and despite the fact that unfortunately with the births of her children, she still has not necessarily created that loving relationship that she also desired with her husband, but she still, amidst her despair, is able to recognize and appreciate and express gratitude to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Al Ken Kara Shmo Yehuda. I always tell mothers, I think each of us has to have a Yehuda. Not that we name our child Yehuda, but we have to see our children as ultimately a Yehuda, Hapam Odeh Et Hashem. This child is an expression of HaKadosh Baruch Hu bestowing kindness upon me. And that's the gratitude that I then want to return to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Let's continue with where the Christians divided up the chapter, where they saw new story. Now we're going to focus on Rachel. However, according to the Misorah, in our standard Torah text, we see that the story really continues as if to tell us, First, we hear of Hashem's involvement in Leah and Leah's response to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's involvement in her life. Now we're going to hear how Rachel responds to this. How should Rachel respond? It's almost as if the Torah, by employing the same verb in Pasuk Aleph, Vatera Rachel, is hinting that Rachel should be responding to Pasuk Lamed Aleph, Vayera Hashem. Just like Leah responded to Hashem's intervention in her life, we're waiting for Rachel to realize, wait a second, something's missing. God saw Leah, but he didn't necessarily look out for me. What should Rachel then do at this moment? Davin, she should turn directly to Hashem and say, excuse me, Hashem, I'm also in this picture. I also want some type of recognition and involvement. But instead, the Torah goes out of its way to tell us, oh, Rachel saw indeed, but she wasn't looking at Hashem's involvement with Leah as opposed to her. Rather, Vatera Rachel, ki lo yalda liyakov. What is Rachel focused on? Not her relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but her relationship with Yaakov, and then continue one more clause, Vatikane Rachel ba'achuta. And instead, who else does she look at? She looks at her relationship with her sister, albeit one relationship is missing here, namely with Hashem. But as she looks at her relationship with her sister, what feelings are percolating? Those of jealousy. Vatomer el Yaakov. And this is what pushes her to go to Yaakov and demand with a very fierce term, Havali banim, you must give me children. Vim ayin meta anochi. For if not, then it is as if I am dead. She says, I cannot bear the sadness anymore. Give me children. So if you turn the page for a moment to the Parshanim, you'll see that most of the Parshanim, you don't have to turn yet. If you look at source number 2 and number 3, you'll see that in source number 3, the Ramban quotes Rashi, quotes Ibn Ezra, who explained that really what Rachel Imenu was asking for was Shetitpalel alai. Please, Yaakov, I really mean that you should daven for me, Vim ayin meta anochi, because if not, then it really is as if I'm dead. And this is very difficult, explains Rashi, difficult for any akara and to be able to express, please, you daven for me. But Rashi and Ibn Ezra ask the most obvious question, and that is that if Rachel is coming out of a sense of despair, then why does Yaakov respond in the next pasuk by getting angry? That's why the Ramban explains, Al Derech HaPshat, Amra Rachel Yaakov, the second to last line, Sheyitin Labanim. The Ramban explains very systematically to his approach of appreciating the way that the Torah tells the stories of the Avot and the Imahot, not as ossified statues of petrified piety. That's not my term. That's Rav Lichtenstein. But rather as matriarchs and patriarchs that we're meant to relate to and we're meant to be sensitive to their frailties and shortcomings, ultimately to appreciate how they overcome them respectively. So when we look at Rachel, the Ramban says, look at what she does. She really is demanding children. And even if in her deep subconsciousness she meant to say, daven for me, that's not what she said. She says, you give me children. Sheyitpalel alaha ad sheyitein la banim al kol panim. Do whatever it is that you have to do. Stand on your head and spit nickels. Go to the kotel and daven for 120 days straight. Vim ayin shetamit atzma. For if you do not do this, if you do not grant me children, I will kill myself. Bitzar dibra shelo kohogen bekinatan. And the Ramban explains, understand that she says this out of terrible pain. V'chashva ki ba'avato ota yitaneh Yaakov. And she really thought that if she would make this demand of Yaakov, then how would Yaakov respond? Out of love for her, yitaneh Yaakov, yilbasak ve'efer, v'yitpalel ad sheyu labanim shelo tamut bitzara. He would do whatever necessary. He would go through whatever steps. He would answer whatever request that she had, so that she would not die out of despair. But the Ramban explains, for this, Yaakov has a right to get angry. And he didn't mean to necessarily embarrass her, but rather, he wanted her, explains the Ramban, not to rely on his tefillah, not to rely on his powers, shebalit palil alatzma. What should she have done? turns directly to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the Ramban explains that's why the next pasuk says, Vayichar apo, va'amar la, ki hadavar biyad alukim, v'lo biyado hatachat alukim anochi, asher manan mimech pridaten. Am I in place of God? You should be turning to God. I'm not a God. I can't manipulate powers of nature for you. And interestingly, explains the Ramban, the Torah does not criticize Yaakov. In other words, Yaakov was correct for his response to Rachel.
It's interesting though, because if we look one generation back with Yitzchak, the Yitzchak, it was Yitzchak to Daven. So the truth is, she could be thinking, this is the model that's set up. Why is it wrong for me to ask him to Daven for me?
Beautiful, beautiful. So there in the case of Yitzchak, Vayatar Yitzchak, Nochach Ishto. What does that mean? She was also doing. She was also praying. And here our sense is that we haven't heard. We haven't heard Rachel recognizing Hashem. We haven't heard Rachel turning to Hashem. We hear Rachel turning to Yaakov, perhaps to turn to Hashem. But clearly the Torah is saying that's insufficient. With this we turn to the Rashi right before to better understand a little bit of Rachel Imenu. I always picture Rachel, as the Torah describes her, as Yifat Toar, Yifat Marev, as a beautiful young girl who probably walked around with a tremendous amount of confidence growing up. She was always that very cute girl with the long hair and the curls and the matching Mary Janes and shul. Whoever would say, oh, you're so beautiful. Oh, what a shidduch you're going to get one day. And lo and behold, she did. That's right. Here she is, and Magiala, she almost anticipates that, of course, Yaakov is going to fall in love with her. Chazal even tell us that from the time she was very young, everyone said the older child is going to go, Esav will be married to Leah, and Yaakov will marry Rachel. And yet, comes the wedding day, and what happens? The disappointment of her life. Her sister takes her place. But still, she gets married at the end of the 7 days of Mishteh. And then she thinks, I'm really the loved one. Magiali. One gets married, and as we find many young women feel today, I get married, what's the next stage? Have children. And again, Rachel is disappointed. And the Torah is telling us that sometimes not everything works out the way that we think it's going to work out. And one has to remember that who's involved in the bigger picture? Who's involved in every stage? HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Somehow, though, Rachel has not yet recognized this. That's why the Sforno points out as well, on Yaakov Avinu's words, source number 4, Alamra Havali. Rachel said, give me. Ki ilu hayabi adola asotze. That what was Yaakov truly angry about? That Rachel was convinced that Yaakov was the one to manipulate nature. That Yaakov could really do this. V'ka'as v'kinato lechvot kono. And Yaakov was angry to protect the respect of God. To say, Hatachat Elokim Anochi. Perhaps he's saying, not only do you think I'm in place of God, but maybe he's trying to hint to Rachel, why are you only looking at the forces of Elokim? And by this I mean, if one goes back all the way to the beginning of the Torah, to Bereshit Perek Aleph, there we find the first expression of Elokim. And Chazal will extrapolate from here the terminology of Midat Hadin. What is Elokim in the first chapter of Bereshit? Elokim is judge. Elokim is the one who creates nature. Elokim is universal. Elokim is omniscient and rules over the forces of nature. But all of a sudden, in Perek Bet of Sefer Bereshit, we find the incorporation of the term Hashem Elokim. Hashem who's going to be involved personally out of all the creations, specifically with mankind. Hashem who is going to bestow mitzvah observance upon mankind. Hashem is going to provide food for man, ish and isha to eat. Hashem, whom then Chazal will learn, is an expression of Midat HaRachamim. So maybe what Yaakov is trying to reprimand Rachel with as well is to say, why are you only looking at Elokim and seeing me, Hatachat Elokim? Rachel, why are you only looking at the forces of nature? Why are you only appealing to what you think is din, what you deserve? Don't you recognize that there is another expression of God in this world? And what is that expression? Yudke Vavke, that's Hashem. That's the expression and the bestowing of rachamim, of mercy. Maybe you should really turn to Hashem and appreciate that other dimension and expression of God. Let's continue and see if Rachel does appreciate this. That's right. So, and she sees that childish judgment. So only now will she then, seeking the advice perhaps of the matriarchs, she then turns to what Sarah did initially, namely giving her maidservant, Bilhah, to Yaakov. And just as Ilana mentioned, what does she name that child? Pasukva, Batoma Rachel, Danani Elokim. How does she see this child? An expression of judgment. Magiali, I deserve it. This is a child I've been waiting for. And not that it's a negative term that she uses Elokim, but what are we really hoping for? That she'll appreciate Rachamim. That she'll see that there's another expression of God in this world. But not yet. She still sees this as Elokim, as Din. She names him Dan. Comes child number two. A very harsh terminology. Pasuk Chet, Batome Rachel. Naftulei Elokim niftalti im achoti gam yacholti. Yes, it's a hard pasuk to say, even if you don't necessarily stress the words. What does she say, and thereby name him Naftali? Naftulei Elokim. I have contested with God, and also contested with my sister, gam yacholti, and I have surmounted. I have basically won or participated in this competition. How does Rachel see children based on this pasuk? She sees children as a contest. How many children do you have? Well, three, right? Someone else can say, well, I have five children. And she sees this as what gives her meaning and identity. It's almost as if she says, well, with one child, I only had one child, and my sister had four children. But now I can walk with a double stroller down Central Avenue as well. And this is what gives her the impression, yes, Naftulei Elokim, you see, I'm in the contest, I'm in the competition. And as difficult as this may sound, based on the Torah, the word of Naftali, of a contest, of contesting with God, tells us that Rachel has a somewhat of a myopic vision. She sees children only as what mothers are supposed to bring into this world, and she doesn't necessarily appreciate that these are manifestations of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's involvement of Rachamim.
What about the teal that she was intertwined?
Very nice, beautiful. So that's a beautiful midrash, which is taking the word out of context, which is what midrash does in order to a certain degree to exonerate Rachel, right? This way she sees herself as intertwined, as I am now together with my sister building Shiftei Yisrael. And Chazal will certainly offer only praises to Rachel, because, and rightly so, because in the end we're going to see, I shouldn't give the story away, but she does surmount. And yet, I think that based on the Ramban and other Parshanim, if we read the text carefully, we can appreciate that at this stage, Rachel hasn't necessarily viewed Hashem, Yudke Vavke, as part of the picture. You should know that every time I think about the Shi'ur and read these psukim, and honestly, I know that this is very harsh towards Rachel Imenu, I tell myself, oh no, one day, Me'a ve'esrim ve'ezrat Hashem, Rachel Imenu is going to meet me, and she's going to say, Shani, why did you portray me so negatively? And I say, don't worry, Rachel, you just have to wait till the end of the Shi'ur. Just wait. Now, let's take a look as we continue. And we'll see in the meantime, Vatera Lea, Pasuk Tet. The same exact verb that we found in Pasuk Aleph and in Pasuk Lamed Aleph as well. Now Lea is going to respond to everything that she sees around her. She sees Kiam Dami Ledet. And what does she do immediately without complaints? And yes, you should argue she has nothing to complain about because she has four beautiful sons. Nonetheless, she will immediately give her maidservant to Yaakov. And now let's see how she views these children. Zilpah gives birth to her first child, and Leah names him Gad. What does she say? Ba Gad. For those who are familiar in Israel with the lottery, it's called Chish Gad, right? The Gad, the fortune that comes very quickly. She says, this child is a fortune. Does she say that this child was deserving to me? Does she see this child as an expression of judgment? Magiali? Absolutely not. This is such a wonderful gift. Not necessarily that she sees this as an expression of Hashem's involvement in her life, for after all, it was through her maidservants. Nonetheless, she appreciates the fortune, the gift that she was given, so that when another child, another son is born to Zilpah, she names him Asher, ki ishruni banot, for all the young maidens see how lucky I am. And that's how she sees herself, as lucky, as being bestowed with a gift. But now we have another story, and another Rachel story, almost as if the Torah is telling us, hopefully this one will lead her to a child. But ultimately, we're going to see that the narratives contained within the broader birth narrative are really here to explain why Rachel is not going to be granted a child. Vayelach Reuven b'meketzir chitim, vayimsa dudaim basadeh. Reuven goes out and he sees dudaim, which most Parshanim understand as fertility mandrakes. Vayaveotam eleya imo, knowing that his own mother has also not been able to bear in recent months at least, he brings them to Leah. Vatomer Rachel eleya, tnina li midudae b'nech. What does Rachel demand? Again, in a very similar terminology, tnili is more or less synonymous with Havali, excellent. Tnina li meduta ebenech. Give me now of the dudaim, and she doesn't suffice by saying dudaim, she says the dudaim of your son. I want, just like all the other kindergarten children are bringing home beautiful scribbles to their mothers that their mothers are then posting with magnets on the refrigerator, I want dudaim of your son, that I could also have a piece of your son, so that I could also put a beautiful art project or parsha sheet or quiz on the refrigerator with a magnet. And we hear on one hand Rachel's aggravation and distress, but we also hear her demand. We hear again, what is she turning to, or where is she turning to for children? She's turning to Dudaim, she's turning to nature. She's turning to the powers of fertility. And if we turn now to the Parshanim, we're going to see how this is underscored. For example, by Sforno, who says, what was Reuven really looking for? He wasn't following his father in the fields like most boys would do. He really is a mama's boy. He was looking out for Dudaim, min Esav Tov Heriach, v'tovel hatolada. He was looking for something that would help his mother become all the more beloved to his father, namely that she should bear more children. He was going out to look for some type of fertility treatment. And this is what Rachel demands. Allow me to have that IVF turn. Give me that fertility drug. And the Ramban says as well, this is what Rashi and Ibn Ezra and the Rashbam, they all understand it as some type of flower, a jasmine flower, Yasmin. But Ramban disagrees somewhat, and he says, V'hanachon, ki ratzta behem lishtasheya v'leitaneg berichan. He says, even though all the other Parshanim explain that it was believed that these mandrakes has some power, fertility, perhaps because the root even looked like a pregnant lady with legs. But he says, I disagree. It wasn't necessarily used directly for fertility, but rather it was an aphrodisiac that Rachel wanted the reach in order still to help her become pregnant. But, says the Ramban, know that this is not what helped her. When you're going to hear that Rachel has a child, just know, ki b'tzvila nifgeda Rachel v'lo b'derech harifuot. That all these forces of nature, that is not what granted her conception. That is not what allowed her to have a child. Anna, although we see once again Rachel demanding something, hoping that this is what's going to enable her to conceive, she thinks again, it's Elohim. Whether it's the Elohim, the forces of nature that Yaakov may control, or the forces of nature that drugs and fertility mandrakes may control, we find that she's seeking after the wrong direction. And this is what brings us to source number 7. This is where Chazal say, we saw the same structure that you did, and something really went awry. Rachel should have been granted those last 4 children. Rachel should have had the same portion of Shiftei Yisrael, of the tribes of Yaakov. So what happened? Chazal see that here Rachel resembles more Esav. Do you remember the Esav-Yaakov story? Esav comes after a very exhausting day in the fields, and he sees Yaakov preparing Nizir Adashim. And what does he demand of Yaakov? Give me the same words, Tna, give me from that Nizir Adashim. And Yaakov says, okay, Are you willing to forgo a long-term blessing for a short-term reward? And Esav is, he's willing to forfeit his bechorah, his right of firstborn, so that he can satiate his appetite at that moment with the food that Yaakov is preparing. Here we find the Chazal see Rachel is doing the same. V'tomer Rachel aleya, t'nina li meduzei b'nech, ha'ma'at kachtech et ishi, responds Leah. And Rabbi Shimon says, what really happens at this moment? Lefi shezilzala v'tzadik. Rachel was willing to forfeit a real opportunity, an opportunity to spend time with her husband, possibly even to conceive on that night. Lefichach eina nechneset imo b'kfura. She was willing to forfeit that long-term possibility of kfura, of participating in building the tribes of Yisrael and being buried next to Yaakov, all for the short term, all for the gratitude and the pleasure of the Dudaim at that moment. But if you think that's harsh, look at the next opinion. Rabbi Eliezer says, Zo hefsida, v'zo nistakra. No is a fair deal. They each gained something, and they each lost something. Leah hefsida dudaim. You have to be sensitive. Leah lost her flowers from her son. V'nistakra shnei shvatim u'bechorah. But what does she end up gaining? Two more tribes and the bechorah, basically the malchut. The Rachel nistakra dudaim. Rachel also gained something. What did Rachel gain at that moment? She gained the dudaim, the flowers. V'hefsida shvatim u'bechorah. But she lost tribes and malchut. She lost the opportunity for a long-term bracha. Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachman says, you know what happened at that moment? She lost both. Hefsida shvatim u'kfura imo. She gave up, she forfeited the long term, the short term, the future of Am Yisrael, all for these dudaim, all because of her short-sighted nature, and only being able to see the powers of nature that bring children, and not necessarily the intervention of God, of Midat Rachamim. And that's why, according to the Ramban, Leah responds by saying, "Hama'at kachtech et ishi." Rachel, don't you see what you're doing? You have to change your perspective in life. It's not enough that you took my husband. What does she mean by this? Rachel didn't take her husband. Yaakov legally married her. Rather, she means, "Hama'at mimech shetikhili et ishi ki'ilu at ishto." It's not enough that you see yourself as the only wife of Yaakov. Va'ani ha'ama. You see me as the second wife, and I understand that. I understand that I took your place, and I understand that I really, to a certain degree, am the wife who bears forth the children. But av ki ta'asi atzmi giveret lakachat hadudaim asher ani mitaneg berecham, that that doesn't give you the right to act as the gvira, as the queen mother. As a matter of fact, in ancient Mesopotamia, who had the right as queen mother? The first wife who gave birth to the first son. Excellent. She says, enough of this. Enough of you thinking that you're in control. Enough of you demanding from everyone around you what you think you deserve. Take a step back, Rachel, and recognize that there's a bigger picture. And maybe if you take that step back, you'll be able to appreciate that beyond Elohim, Hashem is involved in your life as well. We turn back to the Psukim now, and we're waiting to see, is Rachel going to learn? We know that in the interim, Leah gives birth, firstly, to Yisachar. How does she see her first child that she merits for having given the Dudaim to Leah, to Rachel, and thereby being granted an extra night with her husband Yaakov? She says, I now have a Sachar, Asher Natati Shivchati Li'ishi. She says, I know I have this child, I did something. I actually do deserve the child because I forfeited my position. I gave my maidservant as a wife to Yaakov, and therefore she mentions Elohim, Natan Elohim Schari. So to her next child, Zvadani Elohim. She sees her child as a Zevid, which means a present, but nonetheless a present from Elohim, because she says, Yaladati lo shisha banim. And Chazal mentioned here that this is her reward for giving the Dudaim to Rachel, Vachar Yalda Bat. And when she has a daughter, what does she name the daughter? Dina. She sees the child as Din. But this is after she recognizes that, of course, there's Yudke Vavke, there's Rachamim in this world. We finally reach Pasuk Chafbet. Vayizkor Elohim et Rachel. Elohim remembers Rachel. And on one hand, we're a little bothered. Why is it that Elohim remembers Rachel? I thought Hashem is the one granting children. But in the case of Rachel, who is only turning to Elohim, who is only turning to the forces of nature, who finally answers her through nature? Elohim. And what does Elohim do? Vayiftach et Rachma, opens her womb. And lo and behold, then, when she gives birth and she has that son, what does she decide to name the son? Her first explanation is Asaf Elohim et Cherpati. She says, yes, finally. Magiali, indeed, I do deserve this. God has contained my embarrassment. God, the God of nature, finally has stopped this cycle, and now I have a child. But if the story would end with this pasuk, what would she name the child? Asaf. Nice name, by the way. And yet, she says, no, no. She recognizes something, and I always envision between Pasuk Chaf Gimel and Pasuk Chaf Dalet, which is known as the double Vayomer, or in this case, Vatomer phenomenon, where she's still speaking. Vatomer Asaf Elokim et Cherpati, Vatikrat Shemo Yosef Lemor, Yosef Hashem Li Ben Acher. We learn that there must have been some interruption for the Torah to begin anew, Vatikrat Shemo Yosef. I always envision that the interruption was that a midwife put that child that she sees as an expression of nature, put that child in her hands. And many of us know as mothers, what's one of the first things that we do when the midwife puts the child in our hands? Right? The umbilical cord is still attached. And what do? We look at this child, and strangely, we start to count the fingers and the toes, right? Isn't that strange? Why do we do that? Because it's mind-boggling. That's right. So all of a sudden, have this being, this life that was forming inside of us, is now living outside, that we're holding in our hands, and we see that every little expression, that every remarkable movement of the child is nothing short of miraculous. And at that moment, it hits Rachel, and she says, Yosef Hashem li ben acher. It's almost as if Rachel recognizes at that very moment, oh my, what was I thinking? Children are not merely an expression of Elohim. Children are an expression of Yudke Vavke, of Rechamim, of God's subjective personal involvement in our lives. And therefore, if I'm ever going to have another child, who is definitely going to grant me that child? Who do I see now as involved in my life? Hashem, Yudke Vavke, Yosef Hashem li ben acher. And it's at that moment that Rachel has surmounted her shortcoming. And it's at that moment that Rachel realizes on her own, this is not Asaf. Vatikra Shemo Yosef. Yosef Hashem li ben acher. She's able to recognize Hashem in her life. She's able to look now and appreciate that beyond forces of nature, there are forces of Rachamim. That God is deeply, deeply interactive with us. That God is certainly involved. And at that moment, Pasuk Hafei, Vayhi kasher yalda Rachel et Yosef, Vayomer Yaakov elavan, Shochini velcha emilkomi ula'artzi. And this is a little ironic. At the moment that Rachel gives birth to Yosef, that's when Yaakov says, you know, time to go home. So Chazal wonder, what happened at that particular moment? Why did he wait until Rachel gave birth to Yosef? So Chazal say that Yaakov knew, Beruach HaKodesh, that he was supposed to have 11 sons born in Chutz La'aretz and one born in Eretz Yisrael. So the last one was born in Chutz La'aretz. Now he said we can make Aliyah. Okay, very nice. But if that's the case, it should have said, Vayhi kasher yalda, or nolad ben le'Rachel, or kasher yalda Rachel ben. It says specifically, when Rachel gave birth to Yosef, that's when Yaakov realized, time to go back. When Yaakov hears Rachel for the first time in his life and in her life saying, Yosef Hashem li ben acher, that it's Hashem who's involved with me, and it's Hashem who grants children, that's when Yaakov realizes, you're right, I forgot that also. I've been here for over 14 years, and nothing has been going that well for me. Perhaps that's because I didn't turn to Hashem. I felt distant from God. He hasn't once turned to God. And just to prove this, thereafter, when he tries to build up his flock and he places stripped spars of wood in front of the animals, he explains to his wives, why am I so successful? Because an angel of God came and told me to do this, even though we didn't see any revelation of an angel of God. But all of a sudden, Yaakov is also more sensitive to Hashem's involvement in his life. And maybe that's why, in the chiasm that we explored at the very onset of the shiur, maybe that's why it's not just the birth of children that transforms the life of Yaakov from negative to positive. It's particularly the development of Rachel, the cognizance that Rachel comes to, that changes Yaakov's appreciation of Hashem's involvement in his life. And with this, then, we continue only to hear that after Rachel takes 5 steps forward, she takes a few steps back. We're on page 5. When Yaakov is ready to leave, the Laban halach legzoz et sono vatignov Rachel et atrafim asher la'aviha vayignov Yaakov et lev Laban. So far we've seen, this is the second time, that Yaakov ultimately is responding to Rachel. He responds to Rachel's recognition of Yosef Hashem li ben acher by recognizing time to put Hashem back in my life, time to go back home and build the Beit Elokim that I promised I would build for God. And so to hear, Rachel, though, steals the truffin, Yaakov also is going to, in a clandestine manner, try to escape from Lavan. And even though we know that Rashi points out, Vatignov Rachel et hatrafim, in source 11, Lahafrish et aviha me'avodat elilim nitkavna, Rashi goes out of his way, quoting the famous Midrash, that Rachel did this, she stole the truffin for what purpose? For righteous reasons, namely, to stop her father from worshipping Avodah Zarah. Isn't that beautiful? And yet, points out the Ibn Ezra, he says, but look at source number 10. What does Rachel do with those trafim? She takes them, and when Laban comes to look for these powerful idols of his, she places them under her saddle of the camel. And what does she tell her father? I'm sorry, I can't get up now, but yesh li orach derech nashim. I am now menstruating. In other words, during her menses, she will put these trafim directly underneath her. And Ibn Ezra explains, if that's the case, then Rachel had no intention of destroying these avodah zarah, these forms of idolatry. Why not? Because even though she recognized Yosef Hashem li ben acher, it's very difficult to transform your entire worldview overnight. And deep inside of her, Rachel still believed in some forces of nature. She still believed in sorcery. And that's why she takes them. After all, explains Ibn Ezra, HaKarov Elai, Shatrafim Heim Al Tzurat B'nei Adam, these idols mimic the shape of people, V'hi Asuya L'Kabel Koach Elyonim, and they were meant to bring in the spirits from above. As a matter of fact, they're hollow. We even have different examples of the trafim that were found in Ashkelon. And they're hollow beings that look like, really some of them look like pregnant horses. That was believed that if the spirits, if the winds come into them, then they then share their spirits with human beings in this world. He says, Yesh amrim sherachel genavatam levatel avodat kochavim me'aviha. He's referring to Rashi, who says maybe she did this to stop her father from worshipping Avodah Zarah. Ve'im kein, lama holicha otam imam. So why does she take them with her the entire way back to Eretz Yisrael? Ve'lo tamanum baderech. Why doesn't she bury them along the way? Ve'hakarov shehaya lavan avadada mazalot. She grew up in a household where this was part of the philosophy. This was part of the way that you turn to gods. So she recognizes Yudke Vavke, but who does she still recognize? All these other forces of nature. Upachada shaviha yistakel b'mazalot ladat eze derech barcho. And she truly was afraid that if her father would use these trafim, he would figure out where they went, because she believed that there's power to these trafim. Or as the Ramban explains, even more, it's believed that these trafim were like crystal balls, that they could tell you the sha'ot, the kasmu behem ladat atidot, that Rachel still believed, yes, Yosef Hashem li ben acher, but I want to know from these forces of nature what really is going to be bestowed upon me. And the Rashbam says, why did she steal these trophim? Because she was afraid that her father would use them to find out where Yaakov had run away to. In other words, does Rachel believe that these trophim had powers? Yes, and therefore, where does she put them? Underneath her, while she's experiencing her menses, what does she believe these trophim can do? They can help her conceive. Yosef Hashem li ben acher, but you know what? Let me try other forces of nature as well. Let me try these trophim. And unfortunately, we know that these trophim ultimately lead her to her death. As they enter the area first of Beit El, and then leave Beit El on their way to Ephrat, on their way to Beit Lechem, Vayhi b'hak shopta b'lidata, source number 15, Vatomer laham yaledet, antivi, ki gam zelachben. Rachel, you hereby are giving birth to another child. Vayhi b'tseit nafsha. And she recognizes, as she dies, ki meta v'tikra shemo ben oni. She calls him ben oni. Rashi, Ibn Ezra explain, this is her recognition, this is the son of my sorrow, the son of my mourning. But if one looks at the employment of the term oni, oven, in Tanakh, one recognizes, in quite a surprising manner, that a few times it appears juxtaposed to the words of oven utrafim, for example, in Shmuel Aleph Perek Tedvav, or in Sefer Zechariah, hatrafim dibru oven. And if that's the case, then what is Rachel saying as she's dying? She recognizes that, yes, she's dying, but why? Ben Oni, this is the son of my own entrafim. Yaakov, I know why I'm dying. Because on one hand, I said, Yosef Hashem li ben acher. For a moment, I put my trust in Hashem, in the involvement of God, in midat harachamim. And yet, you know what I did, Yaakov? I have to admit to you that I also put trust in the own. I put trust in these powers of nature, in sorcery. And that's why I'm dying. Because this son, in the end, is ben oni, instead of just appreciating that he comes from Hashem, instead of being ben Hashem, he's ben on, he's ben trafin. And Yaakov stops her and says, no, what's his name? Ben Yamin. Again, Rashi explains, the son of the Yamin, the son of the south, the son of my strength. But what do we know a Yamin is used for, especially in Sefer Bereishit? Anyone remember any right-hand stories? Remember Eved Abraham, who when he goes to find a wife for Yitzchak, Abraham makes him place his hand under his thigh as a sign of an oath. A Ben Yamin, he says, this is the son of my oath. No, Rachel, you are not dying because of your sin. It's not your fault that you put the trust in On. It's because of my oath, that I made the oath that whoever would put their trust, whoever does have the trafim, that person would die. Rachel says, it's my fault. And Yaakov says, no, it's mine. This really doesn't happen in spousal relationships. It's usually, it's yours. But here again, Yaakov responds to Rachel. And Rachel, who dies with the words of Ben On on her lips, we can't think then of a more tragic figure. Of Rachel who recognized, but all for a moment, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is involved in her life. And with this then, we turn though to source number 20 and 21, recognizing that there is a tikkun. There's a short-term tikkun, that not to worry, because Rachel recognized it, albeit at the time of her death, take a look at what happens with her own son, Yosef, who firstly ends up marrying Bat Potiphera Kohen On, and has two children with her. Notice that his perspective is entirely different. When the brothers come down to Mitzrayim, and he reveals himself to them finally, and that they are so fearful, and they recognize, oh no, this is punishment. What does Yosef say? Al tira'u, ki hatachat Elokim ani. Whose words is he incorporating? Yaakov's response to Rachel. He says, believe me, I've learned the message. I learned the message the hard way by being orphaned at a young age. I learned the lesson that my father ultimately was trying to teach my mother. You think hatachat Elokim ani? You think that that's what it is? That I control the forces of nature? You think that this whole story of me ending up as viceroy in Egypt is the forces of nature? He says, then you have it all wrong. Why am I in this position and why did this all happen? Because Hashem natati, Hashem is the one who directed me this way. Yudke vavke, this is the involvement of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And Rachel, both in life and in her death, was teaching us that we can't look at life. We can't look, whether it's at the political situation, or our personal stories, or our communities, and different events that happen. We can't look at it only through the glasses of Elohim, through forces of nature. We must see that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is deeply involved. And that's why her long-term tikkun, her long-term compensation, takes place at the crossroads. For that's where Rachel is. She's always at the crossroads. She's always the Eim HaDerech, which in Hebrew means literally at the tzomet, at the junction. She's always deliberating. I don't know, could this really be explained just politically? After all, there's an Iron Dome that's doing a great job. Or is it, though, that Hashem is really behind here? And maybe Hashem is our Kippat Barzil. And she struggles with this as we all struggle with it. And that's why we are all ultimately the children, not so much of Leah, who recognizes, who sees Hashem anywhere and everywhere, even in the most despairing of situations. We are more the children of Rachel. We struggle at the crossroads as well. And that's why Rachel is our mother who cries for us at the crossroads, who cries when we deliberate, who cries when we straddle between understanding, is God truly involved in everything that goes on in our life? Or perhaps maybe at times, not so much. Who should we truly be turning to? The famous Midrashim, Rashi then who quotes on the story of Breshit in Parshat Vayishlach, that's why Rachel has to remain on the road. Shetehe le'ezra levaneha. She bleeds out so much that Yaakov can't even take her to Ma'arat HaMachpelah. But that, he says, that was also God's involvement, so that one day she could be that bastion of strength to her children. Kshe'yigle otam nevuzar adam, when the descendants of Binyamin and Yehuda are going to be exiled in 597, vayu ovdim derech sham, yatzat Rachel al kivra ubocha, umevakeshet alehem rachamim sheneamar kol birama nishma. And let's see those verses inside in Sefer Yirmiyahu Perek Lamed Aleph. Ka Amar Hashem, Yirmiyahu, and as he's telling all those who are exiled, I just want you to know you're going to stay there for 70 years, and you're not coming back right away. But let me share with you a vision that I have of Rachel Imenu, kol birama nishma, of Rachel who's crying birama, nihi b'chi tamrurim, and she's crying the cries of tamrurim, which, yes, based on pshat, mean embittered cries. But Rav Aviner points out beautifully, they're also tamrurim, literally, as we understand today, traffic lights. The red lights, she's trying to direct us. This is how you should cry. Learn from Rachel Imenu how to cry. Rachel mevaka al baneha. She's crying for her children. Me'ana li'inachem al baneha ki'enenu. And she refuses to be consoled, for her children are no longer. And the Midrash explains, why is it that Yirmiyahu, out of all the personae that he could have chosen from Tanakh, to be crying for Am Yisrael at the time of Galut, at the time that they are being stripped of their last sense of autonomy, why is it Rachel who he portrays as crying? You don't think Sarah cried or Avram cried. So indeed, the Midrash says that they all cried. The Midrash in Ptichta Le'echa begins by explaining, at that moment, Avram was the first one, don't worry, Avram, who always gets up to cry on behalf of humankind, he gets up and he says, God, I'm the one who made such a tremendous Kiddush Hashem. Don't you remember how I was willing to sacrifice my son? Can't you have a little rachamim now on my people, on my descendants? And Yitzchak, who says, yes, and I was the one who was willing to be sacrificed. Can't you do something for me? And Sarah gets up, and Rivka, and Leah, and Yaakov, and Moshe Rabbeinu. At that point, source number 24, I left out the whole very long first part, Bo'otosha'a. When Hashem turns to Moshe and says, Moshe, stop, you know that I don't always listen to your tefillot. Kavtza Rachel Imenu lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. At that moment, Rachel says, let me give it a try. Va'amra, Ribono Shel Olam. And I think, firstly, it's significant that Rachel doesn't stand with the other Avot and Imahot because she's not in Ma'arat HaMachpelah. She's not with them. And she recognizes that that's because She didn't appreciate what they were all able to appreciate immediately. But at the end she says, but I do, Hashem, now I recognize, Galui lefanecha sheYaakov avdecha avani ahava yetera va'avad bishvili la'aba sheva shanim u'ksheishlimo otan sheva shanim v'hegi hazman nisui leba'ali ya'at zavi lachlifeni leba'ali bishvil achoti. And she recounts the story that I was the one who was supposed to be under that chuppah, and Yaakov and I anticipated some type of trick of my father, and we even created a secret simanim language. But when I saw achuti, 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 that's the word that's repeated over and over, and I recognized that my sister would be embarrassed, I set forth and I made sure that my sister would not be embarrassed, and I divulged the secret signs to her. I even slept under the bed that night so that Yaakov would not suspect anything, Hashem. And at that time, recognize how I then willingly brought my own competition. I brought my tzara, my rival, into the home. My achuti, achuti, so Hashem, I, who have the rachamim of a basar vadam, I am just a mortal human being. I had so much mercy on my sister when I brought her in as a rival. So when Bnei Yisrael bring their rival in, when they bring Avodah Zarah into the Mikdash, can't you have a little bit more rachamim? And this midrash always bothered me, despite the fact that she's trying to incorporate the relationship between herself and her sister and encourage God to express that between Hashem and his children. It also bothered me because she doesn't willingly bring Leah in, just like, again, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, she's asking Hashem, allow Bnei Yisrael almost to bring in your rival. It's not really a perfect match. I believe that really what this midrash is trying to tell us is that Rachel gets up and she tells HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I don't understand. I don't understand because I lost my life, Hashem, learning the hard message that children in this world are an expression not of nature and not necessarily of fertility treatments and not of forces that we see in this world. But Hashem, I learned that it's ultimately that every child and every stage of every child's development is an expression of Yudke Vavke, of your rachamim in our lives. And therefore, God, now I just don't understand. Because it's true, Am Yisrael is sinning. And by the rules of din, by the rules of judgment, what do they deserve? They deserve to be punished. But that's not how you relate to children. You taught me otherwise, and it took me a long time to appreciate that. That children in this world are an expression of your involvement in our lives. So Hashem, I'm crying for my children. I'm crying for those personal children that I didn't have because I didn't recognize Yudke Vavke. But I'm crying for my children now. Not because they don't recognize you, but because you don't recognize that that's your responsibility, that that's your involvement, Hashem. Rachel mevaka al baneha me'ana lihinachem. And this time she will not be consoled, because that means that she died in vain. Hashem, I thought that children are here to teach us of your involvement, for us to be able to look at children, and to be able to say, Yosef Hashem li benacher. For us to look at children like Naphtali and Gilad and Ayal, and for us to be able to say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we know that there is a plan. We know that there is a broader plan. We don't understand it, Hashem, and we don't see any din here whatsoever, but we know that there's rachamim, and we know that you're involved in this as well. And to this, HaKadosh Baruch Hu responds and says, Yes, Rachel, Yesh tikva la'acharitech. There is tikvah for you yourself, Rachel. You're right, you did not die in vain. Yesh tikvah la'acharitech, Rachel, because you got there. You recognized it. V'shavu me'eretz oyev. Yesh tikvah la'acharitech, v'shavu banim lebulam. Hashem says, and therefore you're right, Rachel. You who died with the message, who learned more than the other avot and imahot, what it means to see Hashem's involvement in your life through your children, you and your cries are what ultimately will ensure that Am Yisrael come back, that I will forever stay connected and involved with Am Yisrael, so that they who also find themselves on crossroads, so that one day they will come back as well. The Malvin tells us, similarly to the Radak, that it's interestingly and ironically Rachel, who is the one crying for the children of Yehuda. Why? Because she's in Ramah, she's in Binyamin, and Rachel mevaka ul baneha mitzayer ki Rachel im habanim tzoeket bekol al shnei baneha shegalu. She's crying for all her children, for the 10 tribes of Yosef and for the tribes of Yehuda, who aren't even really her children, because she's not crying just for her children, not for the children who were born and not for her unborn children. She's crying for all the children, for the concept of children. She's crying for Hashem's involvement with us. Masha at mitpalelet ba'adam, answers Hashem, yesh baza sachar, ki yashuve me'eretz oyev migalut bavel. V'yesh tekva lacharit hayamim. Not only then will the tribes of Yehuda, but the tribes of Yosef then will also be restored. Be'ed ketz sha'az v'shavu banim legvulam. But the Maharal explains to us that that's why Rachel had to stay baderech. Lefichach nikbara Rachel baderech, Shem haitan nikbara b'ma'ara, because if she would have been buried in the ma'ara, ma'arat ha'machpela, with the other matriarchs and patriarchs, lo haya etel Yisrael shehim begalut shelahim. He means, it's not practically that she wouldn't have been able to daven for them as they passed by her kever. It means that she wouldn't have felt what it means to feel so lost. She would have felt, I reached my resting place. I'm in a cave with my beloved Yaakov, with my own fathers and mothers. And yet, no, she remains baderech. She remains straddling. She remains discontent. Koach hamekabetz v'hamaachedotam. She remains together with Am Yisrael baderech. She remains in the state of being in an intermediate fashion. I am somewhere in between Eretz Yisrael and outside of Eretz Yisrael, between recognizing Elohim and recognizing Hashem. And it's her strength of character and recognition that ultimately unites all of us to remember our own shortcomings, unites all of us to recognize, especially through our children, how HaKadosh Baruch Hu is so deeply involved in our lives. V'lachein Rachel, shenikbara baderech mevakeshet rachamim, she's the only one who could feel that unsettled feeling like Am Yisrael. Ad shiyu Yisrael mekubatzim legamri, v'em lo nikbara Rachel, shiyakeret habayit hamekabetz et Yisrael baderech. So had Rachel not been buried in a manner that represents her psyche, in a manner that represents the stage of a being baderech, kfar nechloku Yisrael chas v'chalila, v'lo haya etzlam ol koach mekabetz u'maseif et Yisrael. Had Rachel not spoken out, then there wouldn't have been that voice. And this is what I told my friend Rachel as well. Had there not been Rachel who speaks out and reminds us that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is so involved with our children, and involved with our children in such a way that we can, through our children, be united as Am Yisrael. Had it not been for Rachel, then we don't know if Ishavu Me'eretz Oyev, and certainly v'shavu banim levulam. It's the koach of Rachel's in every generation. But ultimately the koach of Rachel Imenu, who recognizes how through our children we're meant to see how Hashem is deeply involved with us as a nation, how Hashem takes particular pains to ensure that we recognize that He is involved. And when we do, v'shavu banim levulam, the ultimate tikkun for Rachel is given through her son Binyamin, whom Hashem assures, Binyamin amar, Hashem yishkon lavetach alav, chofef alav kol hayom, uven tefav shachem. That Hashem will constantly reside, particularly in Binyamin. That yudke bavke, these forces, not of nature, but the forces of Hashem's deep involvement and mercy on Am Yisrael, will be manifest particularly in Binyamin, in Yerushalayim. That these are the forces that we're supposed to recognize based on Rachel Imenu as we cry now, as we cry with all the mothers of Am Yisrael, and as we cry particularly with Rachel, to be able to scream to Hashem, Me'ana lihinachem al baneha ki'enenu. Hashem, our children are the ones who prove to us in the miraculous nature of how they're born and how they grow and how they develop that you are involved in our lives. And we wait, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for that moment where we will go from the stages of being baderech, constantly engaged in this process, ultimately to reaching our menucha and nachala, v'shavu banim levulam.
Yisher koach, and thank you.